Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton reporting for duty.
And joining us, we have a special guest emerging from a cabin in the Virginia woods, Mr. Carmen Cartenuto.
Hello, everyone. I'm fuller excitement for this podcast.
Well, he's here all night, guys. We're glad to have Carmen back, especially after our world-renowned Irish Stereotypes episode. That's maybe we'll get you guys to listen to this upcoming St. Patrick's Day once again.
Yeah, we'll just post that episode again.
Absolutely. Cam, what's our conundrum this week?
Well, we're going to call this episode Brian Fuller, Return to Star Trek.
So, the news broke last week. I'm sure all you hardcore fans are aware of it. That's longtime Star Trek writer Brian Fuller will be returning to the franchise as the co-creator and executive producer and showrunner of Star Trek 2017, the new series that will be debuting on CBS before going on to CBS All Access, their streaming platform for the network. And then it'll be airing via... the internet, the new way people watch those kids.
The interwebs.
Yeah. But here's the thing. Last episode, our Valentine's Day episode, Cam, you and I kind of gave our initial thoughts on this. That news actually literally broke the day that we were recording Valentine's Day, and you know, scheduling did not permit us to go more in depth on Brian Fuller. But I think this is worth talking about. I'm just curious. So, Carmen, we've got you here. Tell me about your initial reactions upon hearing the news that this guy was going to be coming in. Pretty much being the shepherd of the franchise. Of course, we had Alex Kurtzman. He was the one who's kind of first attached to Star Trek 2017. But Cam, you and I have discussed it. Really, I think we agreed his job would be finding a head writer, you know, somebody to kind of shepherd the series along that way. Mm-hmm. Carmen, I'm curious. What are your thoughts about your initial thoughts from a week ago when you first heard this news?
I was very excited. Despite not knowing who Brian Fuller was at the time, I was mostly excited just because he sounds like he shares the same interests in Star Trek as I do.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of the fans were very excited about. Because you know what? Here's the thing. Trekkies can be a prickly bunch.
What are you talking about?
Well, you know, just that's the unfounded stereotype, perhaps. But you know what? It seemed as if there's almost universal like acclaim for this particular hiring. Cam, you and I have both expressed quite a lot of consternation about who would eventually take on the showrunner role. Just briefly recap for anyone who didn't tune in last week. What were your initial thoughts about the hiring of Brian Fuller?
I didn't really have any thoughts.
Yeah.
Because I knew nothing about Brian Fuller. I had seen his two episodes of Deep Space Nine. Both of them, are really good episodes. But that was about it.
Yeah.
And actually, I guess I'd seen Bride of Chaotica.
Oh, and I believe I made you watch Drone.
That is also
for,
true.
The Transporter Mishaps episode.
But I don't think I tied that one together with him at the time.
Sure. Yeah.
So I really only knew of Bride of Chaotica. And of course, Spirit Folk.
Oh, yeah. What are you talking about? You have tons of Brian Fuller knowledge.
I guess so. Yeah. But so at the time, I was sort of, I thought I was fine. Like, I was like, hey, sounds good. Better than, you know, had it been like Roberta Orsi or something like that. So yeah, it was promising, but it didn't really mean a lot to me. But this past week I did a deep dive, so I'm more prepared this week. I won't be quite an embarrassment.
So in Cam's words, Brian Fuller, better than a 9/11 truther. Yeah, you know, just for all you fans out there. My initial thought was, wow, a dream come true for Tyler. This never happens. So I'm waiting for something to go wrong here.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter was, Cam, I brought it up on the podcast multiple times that,
oh, yeah.
I would have loved to see Brian Fuller take on the role as showrunner. I also said that there's no way in hell he ever would. He has a very full plate. He's in demand. He's also showrunning American Gods. Brought it up before, the likelihood of Brian Fuller, not so much. They landed him. And Cam, I wonder if maybe the signals were there earlier than we had thought. Let's flash back to August 2015. We're at the Las Vegas Star Trek convention, the biggest in the world. We're getting goodie bags as part of our seat package, right?
Right.
You brought up on a previous podcast that they actually had cards for CBS All Access included in those bags.
Right.
So maybe the wheels were already spinning then. Brian Fuller also happened to be on the main stage at that particular convention.
Yeah.
Hannibal had just been canceled a couple weeks earlier. It still hadn't finished its run.
Yeah.
You know, it was still airing off its remaining episodes. I don't know. Maybe talks had happened. The reason why I don't think it's totally out of this world is because I have a quote from a few years ago, in fact, from Brian Fuller with regards to his thoughts about where he'd like to see Star Trek going. So this is from a March 2009 interview with IF Magazine. He said, "I told my agent and told the people of J.J. Abrams' team I want to create another Star Trek series and have an idea that I'm kicking around. I'd love to return to the spirit of the old series with the colors and attitude. I loved Voyager and Deep Space Nine, but they seem to have lost the 60s fun, and I would love to take it back to its origin." I think maybe it would... Here's the thing. If he's approaching JJ's people, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago,
yeah,
it's very possible that as soon as Kurtzman was in the running for this, you know, to take it over. Because here's the thing. I mean, the announcement for Kurtzman wasn't made until November. It's very likely that talks were happening long before that, because I understand that CBS wanted the series on air in time for the 50th anniversary in 2016.
Right.
I don't think it's out of this world that Brian Fuller was also in talks to be showrunner, co-creator of the series way back then. So,
I mean, if an acclaimed, like, showrunner is like, "Please, I want to do a Star Trek," and they're like, "Well, we've got a ticking clock. This guy wants to do it. Sure, give it to him."
Well, that's just it. Like, he's so in demand. Like, it kind of makes sense now that I'm thinking about it that he would do it at
this
point.
He's geek-friendly.
And, you know, he's quite beloved. And the fact is, and I think the three of us kind of agree that it seems as if he really does love the Star Trek franchise, not just for... Here's the thing. I think sometimes Star Trek fans love it for the wrong reasons.
Right.
I'm thinking about, like, some of the...
Are you trying to lose us listeners?
I just wonder if, like, some of the people who love watching Star Trek because, you know, the action sequences or the, you know, ships blowing up, I'm like, I don't know if you quite get Star Trek, you know, maybe some of the Renegades fans, I don't know. But it seems as if Brian Fuller loves Star Trek for the right reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is awesome because, I mean, I think a lot of fans were very concerned coming off the J.J. Abrams movie that whoever took over the show under Alex Kurtzman would be making like an action show.
That's what you and I both brought up.
Yeah.
A very action-oriented series. The interesting thing is, and I think we'll dive a little bit deeper into it later on in the episode, if you watch Brian Fuller's other forays into television, he's not like a super action-heavy dude. He does action sequences well, or I've seen in Hannibal, especially like a really thrilling scene in the series finale as well. But he's more about dialogue and characters talking to each other and having conflict with each other.
Yeah.
That's what Star Trek needs, in my opinion. That's what the best of Star Trek is getting it really talky.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm excited. Kerman, you've had a week to stew on this news. I mean, have your thoughts matured at all? Have you changed your initial position about this particular hiring?
No, I actually just keep remembering that there were rumors for a while that there would be a new Star Trek and that it would be... I don't know if you guys heard about these rumors, but that the new Star Trek would be a lot darker and would actually be about the erosion of the Federation. And I didn't like that.
Yeah, that was the Bryan Singer pitch, Star Trek Federation show.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we brought that up, I think, most recently on our Quentin Tarantino Star Trek episode. Tune into that, listeners. This is a great one to kick off the year.
How did that tie into that episode?
I remember guest Patrick Johnston didn't think it was a great idea when we were talking about other directors who could come on. Here's the thing. I kind of thought it had potential, but I don't think any of us were big fans of that particular idea.
I kind of was.
Okay.
I'll be the lone flag waver for that one.
Well, I mean, it's... I'm not going to beat it while it's down. I thought it was okay, but...
It's different.
Here's what it comes down to, and I think this is what we'll be coming back to throughout this particular show that we're recording tonight, is it's all about execution here.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I really do like the idea... Here, I love myself some Deep Space Nine. That's far and away the darkest Star Trek series out there. But the thing that I love most about Star Trek is the sense of optimism.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that Brian Fuller and if you are familiar with both his Star Trek resume and his non-Star Trek resume, is a dark, dark mind going on in there. The fact that he wants to bring it all about optimism, you know, that 60s spirit, that makes me very, very excited what this man's going to do going forward.
Right.
So, guys, you know, why don't we just jump into it a little bit, you know, what Brian Fuller was involved with when it comes to Star Trek initially in his career. We kind of touched upon it earlier. You mentioned episodes like Empath Nor, The Darkness on the Light. He had story credits for that on Deep Space Nine. He didn't get a full-time Star Trek job until, I believe, Voyager.
Season five.
Season five. And so there's a lot of cool ones that he was involved with. Living Witness, that's you know, a very memorable Star Trek Voyager episode involving the Doctor ending up, backup program ending up in the future. And
at the Kyrian Museum of Heritage.
I'm going there for my birthday.
I have it written down on my notes.
Also, the episode Drone, in which the Doctor's mobile emitter combines with Seven's nanoprobes to create this super Borg drone, essentially. I really like Barge of the Dead. It actually proves that B'Elanna Torres has a character.
I didn't like this episode.
Oh, dear, Cam. But here's the thing. All three of those ones that I brought up, are those not very just visually distinct episodes?
Yeah. No, you know, I agree.
Even Barge of the Dead, the scenes on the barge, I'm just like, it has to be a lot of it on the page, you know, for the production staff to get behind it and create it. But I think that what he's putting out there, it's like, this guy has a vision. And
well, he has imagination. He's very limited by the budget of that show because the Barge of the Dead looks pretty creaky.
You know, hey, it's maybe the Klingons aren't the most imaginative people when it comes to Stovacor.
It looks like a high school production, let's be honest. The episode that really impressed me was
Spirit Folk?
Yes. No, it was Course Oblivion.
Yes,
which
yes.
is about the duplicate Voyager ship.
Now, this was a bit of a sequel to the episode Demon, which, Cam, I don't believe you had seen Demon before. So, and I think that's actually interesting. Tell me about your take about Course Oblivion, though, not having seen Demon.
Honestly, I didn't really think much of having not seen Demons. What I thought was really compelling was the fact that the crew is revealed to be aliens that are basically gelatinous, and they're speeding back to meet the original Voyager. And they are falling apart and dying as sort of time ticks down. And ultimately, they never manage to meet them.
Yes.
And they just die and evaporate into space.
They didn't even get, like, a message out to anybody saving all their, like, personal logs and sensors.
Yeah.
It's pretty dark, but there's something about that episode you're just like, shit happens. The universe can be cruel, you know?
Yes.
But it's a great episode, though.
Great episode with a really great premise. And I just love how it sort of throws into question all the previous episodes between Demon and that episode. Like, what were we always following the gelatinous Voyager crew? I don't know. It's up in the air.
Yeah, you know, I never even interpreted it that way. I just assumed this was kind of a one-off adventure. But hey, maybe we've been going back and forth between the real crew and the Demon crew.
Yeah.
I don't know. Carmen, I threw some episodes out there. I know it's been a while since you saw Voyager, but I mean, are there any thoughts that you have about these particular Brian Fuller episodes?
I think he has a very distinct style of the script. I think you're right. He does do some darker episodes, but it's like he works within the setup of Star Trek. He doesn't darken it in order to make a dark story.
Yeah,
he works within the confines of what he's got. I remember in Empath Nor, it's a pretty dark episode, and it takes place in, you know, like another space station.
Yes.
It doesn't go too far out of the boundaries, I guess, of the series.
It's just fascinating what he can do with Empath Nor, just even visually, where it's like, hey, it's pretty much, it is the same set as, Deep Space Nine. But there has to be so much description in it. And he's doing some weird, creepy stuff with, like, super soldiers and, like, Garak, you know. Even O'Brien, who unsuccessfully attempted to kill Garak, you know. I'm fascinated by his imagination.
He really likes bringing a lot of darkness to Star Trek. Mm-hmm. Because you see that? And also Darkness in the Light with pregnant Kira being, like, hunted by a stalker is... I mean, if that isn't the darkest episode of DS9, it's in the running.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. So do you think it's kind of surprising that a guy like this has so much fan support behind him?
No, I don't think so, because he's done a lot of episodes that are very much beloved. Even one that, you say, we aren't big fans of, like Bride of Chaotica. That is an episode I see, you know, made into memes and posted all over Star Trek fan groups. Like, it's iconic with fans.
Yeah.
So, sure, while it may not be one of our favorites, like, a lot of his work is, you know, really loved.
And, well, you know, maybe this could be a chance for us to kind of expand beyond his Star Trek credentials, because I do think he has, like, legit kind of Star Trek credentials. He's been in that writer's room. He's probably working in... Well, he was working in the era where Rick Berman was, you know, going forward with these rules set up by Gene Roddenberry, saying that, you know, Starfleet personnel cannot have conflict with each other.
Yeah.
I don't know any writer who's done an interview who said that that was a good rule to have in the writer's room.
Yeah.
And Ron Moore, who, again, we thought of as like a potential, you know, dream candidate for this job as well. He's even said before, like, look, it's really, really difficult to do. And, you know, why, you know, strap your writers down like that? You know, like, it's just... None of the writers like this. The fact that he's coming from that, he knows that experience doesn't work so well for writers. I think that kind of gives me hope that he's not going to continue a lot of the problems that we had maybe with the Voyager writing staff, and even Next Gen to a certain degree as well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of his Voyager episodes, while I liked a number of them, they're still very much following the template of a Voyager episode.
Yes.
So there's only so much room to grow artistically. But he does have a quote that I really liked. It was from an MTV interview in 2008, where he said, "You always have a captain, a doctor, a security officer, and you have the same arguments based on those perspectives. It starts to feel too familiar."
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a lot about how, well, God, and it's going to be another ship episode or series with a captain, et cetera, et cetera. I really like the idea that he's, in 2008, saying that this is getting really old and we need to shake it up.
Well, I went back and listened to our initial episode when we were discussing the return of Star Trek to television, Cam.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were both not fond of the idea of just having another series on a ship. We even reluctantly kind of pitched a time travel episode following Captain Daniels from Enterprise.
I didn't do that, did I?
I think jokingly.
Oh my God.
No, but I mean, it's like, or having like those, the temporal investigators from the Trial and Tribulations reappear.
Right, okay.
You know, like, here, like, you and I were both like, yeah, it just kind of feels tired at this point. Quotes from Brian Fuller like that, mm-hmm. that really fills me with a lot of confidence that he's going to be taking this in the right direction. The only thing that might get us here is that, you know, CBS is just like, well, we kind of want Star Trek this way or that way.
Mm-hmm.
My sense, though, is Brian Fuller is high in demand. I don't think he's going to agree to go on a series where he's going to have to just toe the company line for CBS.
Right.
You know, I think he'll have enough juice to say, no, you know what, I have a vision, trust me with it. I'll make it something the fans can appreciate. And I think that all the quotes we're talking about with optimism, all that, I think that's giving a lot of people a lot of hope here.
Oh, I think so, for sure. I think it's always good to have like a visionary kind of back these things.
Yes.
Because no matter what, they're going to bring something interesting to it. I mean, even if this doesn't turn out to... I mean, look, the best case scenario is this isn't the Star Trek for everybody.
Yeah.
This is the one where it's distinct, where there's some artistic merit to it, where it maybe does, you know, is a little polarizing. That's, I think, the most interesting Star Trek.
I agree. And you and I have kind of discussed in the past how Star Trek visually kind of looks a little stale.
Yeah?
You know, you and I both love J.J. Abrams directing in both films. A lot of that has to do with the fact that it pops. What you're seeing on screen, it means something. There's, like, just even those lens flares that he's been so disparaged about. I mean, to me, it kind of works. It's something interesting that's going on that we don't usually see with like the master shot, close-up, master shot format of the series. Carmen, what do you think about kind of the potential that Brian Fuller can bring to a series visually, perhaps?
Ooh, visually. Well, I don't know. I mean, the episodes I've seen, well, the Star Trek episodes I've seen him do, have been pretty dark. So
it'll be a lot lower.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if, like, takes place in like a outpost or something. No, I think I'm actually trying to think back to any episodes of Heroes I've seen of his that maybe would lead to that, because I think Heroes was a more visually appealing show.
I think he's best known for doing like the Spotlight episode in season one focused on the horn-rimmed glasses guy.
Yeah.
So I think that would be something that's... and I believe a big chunk of that episode was in black and white.
Hmm. Yeah.
That's something that he's putting on the page there. I think what's interesting to me is that he puts a visual mark right on the script. Like, right. He wants these to be visually distinct. Let me read a quote here, and maybe we can segue into kind of the next topic to discuss here. But and I mentioned this on our last podcast, but TV critic Alan Sepinwall, he tweeted out the day the news broke that after Hannibal, few producers I trust more than at Brian Fuller to find new life in a very familiar franchise. I kind of agree with that sentiment there, because if you look at the Hannibal franchise, they picked away at that every way you could. When I heard that they were bringing Hannibal back to the small screen, I was like, can't wait to not watch this.
Yeah, I remember that when it was coming out the same year as the Bates Motel show.
Yes.
And I was like, boy, which one do I care about less? And I ended up really liking Bates Motel. And, you know, I didn't see Hannibal for many years. But it's interesting, like, how really both of them ended up succeeding. You know, Hannibal sure didn't get the ratings, but artistically it did succeed.
It's I would never suspect that, like, a NBC show about Hannibal Lecter and Will Graham investigating crimes week to week would at all have very much artistic merit to it.
This is what gives me hope for the Star Trek series, I think, because I agree. When I first heard of Hannibal, I love Silence of the Lambs, and I just really couldn't care enough about old, young Hannibal.
Did you ever see Hannibal Rising?
No.
That's one of my favorite lines of all time. It is, memories are like a knife. They can hurt you.
Not a Brian Fuller line.
Yeah.
But it's the inspiration for all of his work.
Obviously.
So if he can make, you know, it got canceled, but if he could make some success out of, because I've heard Hannibal's great from everyone I've talked to about it. So if he can do something with that, I think even taking like the tired trope of space explorers at this point, I think he could do a little, or at least make it interesting.
Well, Cam, you've had the chance to binge watch season one of Hannibal since the news broke.
Yes,
I'm
I
just
have.
Curious about what your thoughts are. You can share your thoughts about Hannibal, but what are your thoughts now on Brian Fuller, now that you've kind of come up to speed about his resume?
So Hannibal kind of sent me into an existential crisis.
Okay.
I watched the show. I burned through the first season, and I began to wonder partway through if I just couldn't watch network television anymore. Because there is a certain template that Hannibal follows that began to drive me nuts. Of the ultimately the serial killer of the week.
Yes.
Him going through the recreations of the scenes and saying, this is my design. And I just was like, this is driving me nuts. I can't watch this stuff anymore. Like, especially episode after episode. And it just, to me, began to be cartoony. I think, become used to more cable network, where it's a narrative that evolves and changes.
Right.
Whereas seeing the same thing kind of week to week really did kind of wear me down a bit. It was interesting that I thought at the end of season one, it began to turn into a show I would actually watch. And ultimately, I think season one might have been necessary, but yeah. I can't say that it really sucked me in at all.
And that's surprising, because here's the thing. I did not watch Hannibal for the first 2 weeks, and then all these television critics that I really respect kept saying what a great series it was. And I watched, and what I found the most to be about the show is just how visually striking it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this, I believe I've said it on the podcast before, I've never been so visually enamored with any television series, period. Again,
what about Breaking Bad?
I think Breaking Bad looks phenomenal. I'd put it up there with, say, Mad Men and Sopranos in terms of cinematography. But boy, to me, I don't know how... I there's another TV critic that I love, Matt Zollersites. He was talking about how watching Hannibal was pretty much the equivalent of witnessing artists figure out, you know, just 2D perspective to 3D perspective when it comes to painting, and just what television can produce on TV. Cam, when you dive deeper and deeper into further seasons of Hannibal, you're just going to be like, what on earth am I watching? But I can't help it. Like, it's amazing. And I agree with you. That format of that procedural format, really, I was not a fan of that. It actually took me about halfway through the first season until I really got sucked into what was going on with Will Graham. character.
That, like, kind of began to lose me.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of just watching characters mentally decay straight, because I think what was interesting about Hannibal to me was that it is played very grim. Relentlessly grim. And yet,
absolutely.
Yeah. Ultimately, everything that has happened in the show is so ludicrous that it becomes, like, very campy to me.
And I think that's intentional on the part of Brian Fuller.
I think so, too. And everything I have read is that says it is very true to the spirit of Tom Harris, the author who created the characters, in which case maybe I shouldn't read his novels. But so, I mean, hey, if it's true to the novels, awesome, and the fans love it, so it's obviously maybe less for me than for them. But I do very much admire his commitment to tone and to the characters. And so I'm really encouraged to see what he can do to Star Trek. But it seems to me his two, like, just going off of my limited experience with Brian Fuller now, of season one Hannibal, a select number of Voyager and DS9 episodes, and also the TV movie of Carrie, which I have seen. Yes.
More than once.
And also, I've never seen it, but I knew a lot about how he had written the pilot for the Munsters reboot,
right,
Mockingbird Lane, which got a lot of a lot of enthusiasm swirling around it,
yeah,
and then never wound up turning into anything.
I think they let it air on NBC as like a one-off, but like it just kind of fizzled. Like,
yeah, you know. Yeah. So it seems to me like his two specialties are kind of this very like campiness and a really like dark, grim mood. These two things do not really match too well with a lot of his talk about wanting to get back to the 60s purity of Star Trek and optimism. I'm like, I don't understand.
Cam, I know you've denied this in the past, but I think you're absolutely 100% wrong when it comes to this. 1960s Star Trek, there is camp involved.
Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right, there is camp, for sure. Yeah, but so, it's more the brightness and sort of the cheerfulness of original series Trek is... Well, not what I'm seeing present in everything else I've seen.
I'll talk about it a little bit more, say, with shows like Pushing Daisies, yes, and Wonder Falls, which are very bright, optimistic shows. I do want to bring up one recollection of an interview with Brian Fuller where, Cam, you'll agree, there's just some absolutely insane, like, stuff going on in Hannibal, just death scenes, and like Brian Fuller said before, I'm just trying to come up with stuff that just makes me laugh my ass off, right, you know, which I understand. And I agree with you, the Case of the Week stuff didn't really sell me so much, but I think you're going to have fewer issues with that in seasons 2 and especially season 3, where it's pretty much just one or two central ongoing arcs. Essentially, like season 2 and 3, they're kind of divided between two ongoing arcs in each season.
Right.
So I think that'll be something for you to look forward to. But here's the thing, I actually think Brian Fuller's ability to kind of balance, and I think he did strike a decent balance, you know, with the Case of the Week versus the ongoing interpersonal conflict. I think that's what Star Trek needs, because my big problem with a lot of these serialized shows is that if you binge watch them, the story all just mashes all together into one just big story, and I can't tell episodes apart. I really think Star Trek needs to have a comedy episode here, a serious episode there, one all about sci-fi exploration there, high concept, another one all about like these moralistic dilemmas that the crews are going through. I think Brian Fuller will be able to go back and forth between a lot of tones. I think he's been able to display that he really can jump from tone to tone successfully. When you look at Wonder Falls, Pushing Daisies, even look at the tone of Bride of Chaotica and say Spirit Folk versus Course Oblivion or Drone, sure, or Living Witness.
Now, though, you named two later episodes there in Bride of Chaotica and Spirit Folk.
Yes.
Are you a fan of those episodes?
No, not at all. But
so when we're talking about lighter, say, original series-inspired episodes, and Carmen, I know you know the original series too, like, would you like to see the show go back that way?
There were definitely parts of it that I really like. I really like how... And this might just be because it was a product of the 60s, but I really like how, for lack of a better term, weird a lot of the episodes were. They would go to this planet, and it had a lot to do with set design, but the sets would be fairly sparse at times, and the creatures they'd come across were the intelligent clouds of gas. And it, you know, as much as I love...
Metamorphosis, man.
Yeah, yeah. And as much as I love Next Generation and the later Star Treks, there was... It did become a bit more sort of normal, I guess, as far as normal can get in in a pan-galactic setting. So, yeah, I would really like to see some of the... If he's going to bring back some of the camp and the spirit of the original, I would like to see some of the weirdness of the original, too. And, yeah, clouds of gas.
Well, Cam, you brought up...
I like to say that so wistfully.
Yes, clouds of gas.
Well, that's actually going to be one of our future episodes, clouds of gas.
Yeah.
There's a lot of clouds of gas.
That Top is a five good point, actually.
We'll save it for episode 100.
Put that one in the chamber.
You actually brought up on our Valentine's Day episode, Cam, how visually striking the original series is compared with other series.
I think any other Star Trek series.
I agree. You know. Just looking back at what Brian Fuller has been able to accomplish, you look at all of his shows, we've kind of touched upon this before, not just like the cinematography, which, you know, encompasses, say, the lighting, but also just the production design, the costume design. Don't tell me that you weren't just fascinated by whatever Mads Mikkelsen was wearing from episode to episode in Hannibal Cam.
I was. I was even more fascinated wondering how anyone could ever think he wasn't a serial killer.
Cam, okay, I'm going to spoil one little scene for you. Like, I think it's the season 2 premiere.
Okay.
Or maybe the second episode of season 2, but there's a scene where like somebody catches Hannibal in the act and he's wearing his suit. And it's just wrapped in this, like, see-through protective suit, so none of his particles are like...
Yeah, he's wearing that at the end of season 1.
Oh, too. Okay, so that's what I was thinking of. That, to me, just looks amazing. Like, that's what I wish, like, just bring something as, like, out there, Matt-driven like that to Star Trek. Like, I love just his ability to think about production design. Like, look at Pushing Daisies. There's the pie hole is the central setting for Pushing Daisies. It looks fantastic. There's so much kind of, even just the apartment buildings people live in. There's just so much like art deco nuances to everything. Look at Hannibal's office in that series. Like you'll get to like the Florence arc, later on in the show, Cam, which is mostly filmed in Toronto. They did a little bit of like second unit work in Florence. The rest is just sets built in Toronto. This guy can really just suck you in visually. I am fascinated what the bridge or the engineering set's going to look like on Star Trek.
Does Hannibal take place in like the 70s?
No, it takes place modern day.
Oh,
no,
so yeah. It's, I guess it's not, okay, because...
It's like a present day...
Interpretation.
Prequel, oh, okay. Sort of, it's very similar to how Bates Motel takes place in present day, but it's, you know, a young, Bates. Norman Bates.
So you mentioned Art Deco, and I was thinking then maybe... Return to the 60s, Brian Fuller would do a like a very trendy Art Deco.
I just want it to look like the first 10-12 minutes of Austin Powers where everyone's dressed like that.
Like, yeah. I would watch that show in a second.
I want the new captain to go BBC One, BBC Two, do the BBC.
Now, here's my question. How much do you think he's gonna smash the template visually? Because Star Trek, especially over the last, like, four series, has stuck to a pretty tried-and-true visual style.
And it bores me to death.
Like, looking back, actually, now that I'm watching through Deep Space Nine, which I think last time I was on, a while ago, I said I was watching through Deep Space Nine, but I'm still doing it. It does start to get pretty repetitive, and it does have its own little style. But that was back... You know, in the last, like, Enterprise ended in 2005.
Yeah.
And, like, that was, you can even argue that that was a different era of television back then as now. Especially, I just finished watching Mad Men and Breaking Bad, what we mentioned. And, yeah, it's vastly different than even the spirit of, like, a lot of TV shows back then.
Here's the thing. Alex Kurtzman, he is the head honcho here. I don't think Brian Fuller is going to be taking orders from him. Like, Kurtzman's got so much on his plate. He's directing.
He's directing his Mummy reboot.
Yeah, that'll take off. I take that back, Alex Kurtzman. But
it's not going to take off.
Okay. Sorry. Here's the thing. I think Brian Fuller is there to say, look, I've gotten bored of Star Trek. I think most fans have gotten bored of Star Trek. We've done 728 episodes. What can we really do that's different? If you have Alex Kurtzman in his corner, who's coming from the J.J. Abrams series, where that was visually striking. I think he's going to be allowed to get away with pretty much anything he wants. I don't think CBS is interested in doing, like, another, like, paint-by-numbers Star Trek series at all.
Do you think CBS is really that interested creatively in what's going on with another Star Trek series?
I think they have... Okay, here's the thing. I think that, A, they have no idea what Star Trek is really all about. They really just want somebody who has that Star Trek pedigree. They're getting that with Brian Fuller, who also has kind of that TV critic pedigree. They're getting that with Brian Fuller. The one thing that you need to keep in mind, though, is like this is going to be the big launching pad for CBS All Access. Here's the thing. It's not CBS, the network, that's going to be in charge of this. It's going to be CBS Studios.
Mm-hmm.
Working with CBS All Access. That's my only concern about, you know, how much leeway he's going to get. But again, like I said earlier, I don't think he signs on to this unless he has a deal that says, look, please don't encumber me. Let me do something that I can guarantee you that a lot of these fans will dig.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think he will have the ability to really smash that Star Trek television template that we've seen so far. And frankly, it has to be done. It really does, because television has changed so much over the last 12 years since Enterprise went off the air.
Very true. I'm just curious, though. It was interesting to me reading a lot of the fan response to Brian Fuller being hired. And I went through a lot of comment boards, not just Star Trek groups, but I went through like Entertainment Weeklies, which is more general audiences. And I noticed a very common thing in among all these messages, and they were, this sounds really interesting, but I'm not paying for CBS All Access.
Yeah, Cam, I've got some amazing messages I'd like to share with you guys.
Yes.
Right here. This channel fan response that I found upon the announcement as well. So this is posted on Facebook, upon news of this. One guy says, that's hogwash. I can understand streaming shows on sites like Netflix and Amazon, but Star Trek needs, in all caps, to be freely available over the air. Otherwise, people will be bootlegging recordings to watch instead of paying for the show. This is a very bad, all caps, idea and big, all caps, mistake to have it go to CBS All Access as a pay show.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy says, CBS can take their pay streaming service and shove it straight up their asses.
No. Tyler, why are you leaving comments on these boards?
No way in hell would I pay to watch CBS streaming when I already pay for their channel through Comcast. Eat a blank, CBS. Eat a giant blank. Here's another one. Good news for the 12 people who subscribe to CBS On Demand. Here's the thing. The whole point is that they want more than 12 people subscribing to CBS All Access.
Yes.
These Trek fans can whine and snivel all they want. You tell me that they're not going to be paying to watch Star Trek when it comes back on
Maybe
TV.
The fans are, but when I was looking at things like Entertainment Weekly, whatever, it was a chorus of people saying, oh, I'm going to have to pay to watch it on network? Forget it. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
And so what does that mean when a general audience is saying, I'm not going to pay to watch this? Is this destined to be a failure?
Here's the thing, and this is actually what somebody was explaining to me, or maybe I was listening to this on a podcast when somebody was explaining the Netflix model here. They realized that these networks are not going to continue to just license away all their content to Netflix in perpetuity, because essentially they want to launch their own streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Netflix is pouring, like, literally, I think, $1 billion into their own original content.
Right.
They want to have their own library that will draw people in, which I think makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to believe other networks, in order to entice people, they need to build up their own library. And that may just mean amortizing a show like Star Trek 2017 over a long period of time to say, hey, come here. This is the only place that you'll be able to find this new Star Trek series. You may not discover it for another 5 years, but I think they're going to be launching other, you know, CBS All Access exclusives further down the road. Maybe they can get a lot of people into Big Bang Theory who will find Star Trek later on.
Sure.
You know, that sort of stuff.
who is into The Big Bang Theory but isn't into Star Trek?
Well, there you go. Yeah. I'm sorry. You know what? I know so many people that watch Big Bang Theory that have zero interest in science fiction, which is interesting to me.
Yeah.
My girlfriend, for one.
My parents.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
That is a valid point, though, that how many streaming services can one subscribe to? I'm kind of feeling that right now because I subscribe to Netflix and I did subscribe to ShowMe when it became freely available. And now that Crave is like available to people beyond Bell, I've signed up for that and I dropped ShowMe. And it's like, yeah, you know, like how many can you expect people to buy? I mean, I don't have cable, so I'm not paying for that. So I do have a bit more.
Well, that's kind of the argument, though, is because recently, and I'm speaking about Canada, of course, federal governments enacted legislation allowing companies to unbundle all these cable packages, or at least mandating that these companies must offer unbundled cable packages. Mm-hmm. So if they're not getting you with these $80 to $150 cable packages, that's more money that people might have to get, hey, I'm going to get Netflix here. Let me get ShowMe or Crave. Those are Canadian streaming services. Mm-hmm. Or else, hey, maybe these Americans will invest in CBS All Access. It's not going to be available up in Canada.
Right.
Awaits to be seen how we'll be viewing Star Trek 2017. Yeah. So I'm curious about that. So maybe, here's the thing, as much as people don't want to pay for this, I really think that there's a good chance that a lot of these fans will end up paying. Guys, it's $6 a month. Like, you can't afford two cups of coffee. Like,
I mean, but the thing is, if they're only signing up to watch the new Star Trek series, why not just pirate it?
Yeah.
It's one episode a week.
I do question...
And I'm not condoning that. Like, I don't pirate stuff at all, period.
Yeah, same.
But if I'm a fan who's like, I don't want to pay this, and, you know, we've, just from our own experiences, have found a lot of Star Trek fans, at least vocal ones, don't seem to have a lot of extra income. And so while, say, maybe $6 or whatever it is for us isn't a big deal, for some people, they're like, you know what? I'm not paying $6 to watch one episode a week.
I honestly think... If you look at, like, the piracy numbers, whatever the piracy numbers are, they still are dwarfed by what the actual viewership numbers are. So I suspect if it's really getting pirated, maybe that'll be enough to entice some people to say, hey, I don't want the hassle of pirating it. I'll go and just watch it through CBS All Access. You know, that means I don't have to wait a couple hours for it to show up. I can watch it earlier. I don't think that's going to be, like, the clincher for a lot of people.
I mean, the Star Trek library helps a lot.
I absolutely think that'll be the case for a lot of people, is just having easy access to this library. It makes me wonder where... Because, Carmen, you mentioned that you're watching all of Star Trek on Crave right now. Maybe that's going to be the new home for Star Trek 2017 here in Canada, at least. I think having like this one big library will be very enticing to a lot of fans who came. You and I have both discovered like a lot of them don't even want to watch or buy DVDs or Blu-rays of the series because they claim they're too expensive.
Right.
So, I don't know. To me, the business model, it's not as much shaky ground as I originally thought when this was first announced in 2017. It actually makes more sense. And I actually do think that there's a big chance that this will probably get like a 5-year, maybe even a 7-year run, you know, way down there.
Oh, really?
Oh, I'm sure you'll be saving this clip after 7 episodes have aired and it's been canned. And so, you know, I'll eat crow. But I do think that...
7 years, he says.
But here's the thing. Like I said, like I think just it makes business sense for them to invest long-term in online exclusive content for their business model. And I think the Netflix model makes sense. CBS had no interest in selling this to Netflix. And Netflix has said, or at least executives at Netflix have said in the past that they were interested in getting a new Star Trek series. These guys have access to all the numbers from Star Trek Voyager, Deep Space Nine, who's streaming those, what else they're watching, how many episodes of Next Gen they may be watching, the original series. They have access to all that data. They know Star Trek fans are going to be going there. I think that's why CBS would not ever give or license a new Star Trek series to Netflix, because I think they know what's a big jewel in their pocket that they have right at this moment. Mm-hmm. So I think the business model makes sense to me.
Okay.
I wish Brian Fuller all the luck creatively. I think beyond that, it's kind of out of his control.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He can only work on the creative side. He can't worry about the business aspect.
But guys, I don't know, maybe do we want to discuss a little bit about the creative side of it?
I would like to, because he's gone on record before saying, I think it was an interview in like 2013, where he said he would love to base it on the Reliant ship and have Angela, I was going to say Lansbury, Angela Bassett.
I want Angela Lansbury as
like
the captain.
Like a Bedknobs and Broomsticks reboot. No, Angela Bassett as the captain and Rosario Dawson as the first officer. So that was what he said, you know, in 2013. I don't know how much he's sticking to his guns at this point for that exact thing. But what would you like to see in a show? Does the idea of a Reliant show interest you?
Yeah. Yeah, I could get behind that for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think
it'd be a very short run when Khan shows up. And, yes. Is it just about the crew surviving on SETI Alpha 6? Or
well, he could do like he did with Hannibal, and it's takes place in the future and there. No, but
it's a present day set prequel.
set after Voyager, but about the Reliant. But yeah, I think just a series with I think if it retains just the exploration and the wonder that a lot of the original series and TNG especially had, and yeah, just kind of had a more diverse cast. I really like the idea of those two actors as playing the command of the bridge.
What about Angela Lansbury?
Oh, she could play the Vulcan. The ubiquitous ship's Vulcan.
What era would you like to see it in?
I would actually like to see it progress, the storyline, and I would like to see it post Voyager. Mm-hmm. I liked Enterprise, but especially lately, I'm so sick of prequels and reboots.
Yeah.
I really just want to see them go forward, and I'm almost at this point, I'm dying for some, you know, current quote Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're sick of prequels and reboots, then be sure not to turn into our next episode. Carmen will be discussing that in depth and how it applies to Star Trek. But here's the thing: I'm curious. Do you think he actually meant the Reliant when he said that? Because, or do you think he's referring to the black female captain that appeared at the very beginning of Star Trek IV: The Voyage Home?
I mean, I think he's talking about the Reliant.
But he is a Star Trek fan, so I doubt it.
He could have just
mistake.
Misspoken, though, because that was captained by Captain Terrell.
But maybe he's not referring to that specific era of the Reliant. The Reliant could go back any point in time, and there could be another Reliant.
But why did he bring up the Reliant specifically?
I think because the visual design of it is so distinct.
Yeah.
It looks really cool.
So it'd be like the USS Sutherland returning, you know.
Yeah, but what if it's the Reliant from the point in the 23rd century where Kirk's adventures first started? Could be a whole different crew.
Sure.
So, yeah. You know, it's not impossible. It doesn't have to be fixed to that specific point in time. Well,
what really kind of excites me more about that particular quote is that he wants to have a diverse cast.
And yes.
I think that's very clear. Like, he's talking about a Hispanic female first officer and a black female captain. I love the idea of having like two women in command, and I really can't wait until these like Trek nerds are just like,
are you trying to lose us listeners?
Every week I am. You're the one who wrote a Brile rap song, Cam.
True.
But no, here's the thing. There's going to be these absolute idiots who are going to say, Brian Fuller's really obsessed with like having women in command of a ship. Mm-hmm. Do you think like if a guy did a show that had a male commander and a male first officer, that people would accuse him of being obsessed with men in command? No, not at all. Like, and so the fact that he's willing to put two women in command, I can't wait for those hardcore like weirdos to just like speak up about that, if that's what eventually happens here.
I bet you it will. If we can look at the Ghostbusters soon to come out remake,
right,
as any indicator that you call them online weirdos, I refer to them as neckbeards. They will definitely be vocal opponents of this. I think it's a great idea to diversify the cast, because it's the Federation.
It's the 25th century. Because here's the thing, I don't think this is going to take place in any of the familiar centuries. I think like just continuity wise, Look, there's been discussions about people debating whether it's going to take place in the J.J. Abrams universe or the Star Trek Prime universe.
Yeah.
I really think he's going to just blast past all of those questions, and mm-hmm. it's just going to be so far in the future that it doesn't really matter.
I agree.
But here's the thing. When it comes to a diverse cast, let's also bring up the fact that Brian Fuller, he's been openly gay for a long time. Star Trek has a very sad history of LGBTQ
what are you talking about, Tyler?
Characters, you know. So the fact that here's the thing, you watch his other series, there's, you know, like gay characters on those shows, and the thing that I like about it is that it's not big plot points, it's just mm-hmm. they're gay. It's mm-hmm. just like, who cares, you know. Mm-hmm. And I brought it up last week, Cam. The Star Trek characters are so bizarrely asexual, like, it's very striking, and it's very just kind of bizarre. I realize Star Trek's supposed to be, like, a family show.
Yeah.
They don't mind showing, you know, Riker getting it on every once in a while. I think it's totally fine to depict, you know, like,
the original sex. Series is a lot more open.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, look, Kirk's, like, getting, like, frisky, like, almost every week, you know?
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I don't think there's anything wrong with, like, depicting sex. Of course, there's going to be, like, those people that are like, what about the children? Think mm-hmm. about the children. I'm just like, guys, come on. Let's get real here. This is...
That's me.
Yeah. But, so I'm intrigued by what he's going to bring. He's going to bring a diverse cast here. You've got, in Hannibal, we've got... Asian cast members, we've got Danish cast members, French Canadian cast members.
Ooh, exotic.
And English cast members.
Yeah.
Are there even any Americans on his shows? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. No, he got some really kind of top caliber actors in Hannibal.
Yes.
Do you think he's going to go after top caliber actors for Star Trek?
I think so. And I think he's, well, there's two things here. I think there's maybe a bit of a stigma attached to Star Trek.
There definitely is.
You know, people are going to be worried, will I be typecast in this? But I think after Hannibal, Cam, I don't know. Keep watching the series. If Hugh Dancy did not suck you in by the end of season one, wait until you get to seasons two and three. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact, before I even say this, you're going to disagree with me, but I do find Mads Mikkelsen to be the definitive Hannibal Lecter at this point.
No.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I find the kid in Hannibal Rising to be the definitive Hannibal Lecter.
But I think, like, just even like... an actress like Caroline Duvernay, like who was in Wonder Falls, very comedic role, in Hannibal, very serious role. He's going to find versatile actors and actresses that can handle everything. Now, how successful he'll be getting top-tier actors, I think that's a good question. I think he's going to go after them. I think they might be drawn to Brian Fuller works,
damn, yeah.
Just knowing what he was able to give, the material he was able to give to, say, Hugh Dancy and Mads Mikkelsen, because... Boy, those guys are acting their asses off throughout Hannibal, and it's really fascinating to me.
I think Rosario Dawson is a, if he wants her, I think he can get her. She is a huge, like, geek over sci-fi and comic books and all that. I think she would probably love to do this show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't think her commitments to the Marvel universe are going to interfere?
I think that's fairly limited. Yeah. The question, I think, more is Angela Bassett. Can you picture Angela Bassett at Star Trek conventions?
Angela Lansbury.
Also doubtful. Yeah. Can you picture, like, Angela Bassett showing up at a Star Trek convention?
No. Never.
No, and if you're a captain, you have to be at a Star Trek convention if you're still alive.
Yeah. Like, I can see Rosario Dawson doing it and having fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
But how much... That's another question. When, you know, it comes to casting to a new Star Trek show, how much is, do you think, casting for kind of people willing to show up at conventions...
Not so much
movies, but what about the TV shows? Because a lot of their marketing comes from going to conventions, really building up, you know, sort of a public public name.
I honestly think a lot of these actors, you're just going to have to suck it up. And here's the thing. Conventions, a lot of these actors, you can tell, they are actually enjoying it.
Not
Linda Park, but other actors are. They're having fun. So I don't think that's going to be the bigger concern. I think what's more concerning is that kind of Star Trek stigma being pigeonholed, in those particular series. But looking at an actress like Kate Mulgrew, she's mm-hmm. having like a career high right now on Orange is the New Black. Jeri Ryan's worked very, very consistently. John Billingsley, Scott Bakula, they've been some of the, you know, most biggest workhorse actors out there, you know, ever since Enterprise went off the air. Patrick Stewart's not having problems getting jobs, no. You know. Mm-hmm. Look at all the actors who migrated into directing as well. Like, I think Star Trek can be, like, a pretty big stepping stone. We're not talking about 1960s television when there's this huge divide between TV acting and mm-hmm. movie acting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I don't know. I think a smart actor is going to look at the pedigree of Brian Fuller and just think, hey, you know what? I have the chance to be part of something pretty special here. And I really do think that whatever he produces, it's going to be memorable, you know, mm-hmm. just creatively speaking.
I have a question actually for Carmen, because you and I have talked in the past sort of about what we would like to see in a new series. And I'm curious from Carmen, like, what sort of aliens and stuff would you like to see maybe return or maybe play a more prominent series? Because jumping from the original to Next Gen, Klingons, you know, got mm-hmm. a huge boost. Yeah. And, you know, going forward to see Cardassians and things like that. I'm curious, what sort of returning aliens would you like to see brought maybe more to the forefront?
And which ones would you never want to see
okay.
again?
Okay, yeah. All right. Yeah. So, I'm a huge Romulan fan. I think the Romulans are, like, really cool. Just in general, it's sort of like, you know, dark Vulcans.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to see some Romulans. TNG was all about Klingons. Deep Space Nine, all about Cardassians. And Voyager was all about, like, the Borg. Yeah. I would really like to see the Romulans take a little bit of this, the Fore. And who would I like to never see mentioned?
Who.
Or mentioned kind of just in... Oh, I'm trying to think if there's any... I'm not a big fan of, like, animal people, so I'm trying to think if there are any animal races, but not really.
I mean, other than the Gorn.
Oh, yeah.
The Mugatu.
Yeah.
the opera singer from Unification.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I'll tell you, I don't ever need to see the Borg again, personally.
Yeah, actually, that's... I'm not anti-Borg, but yeah, I think the Borg have had their moment.
If honestly, we zap forward to the 25th century and the Borg are mentioned as like this kind of greatly weakened cybernetic race, you know, that really doesn't have much of a role to play in the galaxy anymore, I'm fine with that, you know. But mm-hmm. maybe that could even be the possibility of maybe a reformed Borg
right.
race, you know, that could be interesting where. Yeah. They're not so much into the collective consciousness anymore. I don't know. Maybe there is possibilities for the Borg, but the Borg as they are now, not interested.
No. Personally. Yeah. The story's been told.
I'd love to have like a Cardassian on the bridge.
That's one I would really like to see.
I think you've mentioned this on the podcast before, haven't you, Cam?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
The one that I would like to see less of is the Klingons. I think keep them a role within the series. But I think when you have Voyager and TNG and DS9 having a Klingon as a main cast member, I think just maybe go back a bit. You know, maybe have a recurring guest character who's a Klingon, but make it less about the Klingons going forward. I think we've seen so much Klingon that, you know, we've got a lot of great episodes, but let's not keep pounding that same nail, kind of like with Voyager did with the Borg. Like, let's just, you know, pull back a bit and explore another alien. Like, I loved in Enterprise how we got to see so much more Andorians and Tellarites.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Zindi.
And Zindi.
Hey, yeah. I would love it if On the Bridge was one of those very, very near extinct Zindi avians, you know.
What about a Sulaban?
Never. I don't need to see Sulaban.
What about the Darth Sidious Sulaban?
No, I'd love to see more Andorians and Tellarites. Like, even though like the Enterprise really dug into them, I still think there's a lot to mine from those two aliens species there.
Yeah, I do too.
I'll agree.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of possibilities. Because here's the thing. The thing that I love about Star Trek is you have so many of these alien cultures that they dive into, and it's actually kind of fascinating how distinct they are. And I still think that that's one of the big strengths of Star Trek is you can tap into all of these alien species and still pull out new and interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
But Cam, I mean, it's Brian Fuller who's going to be doing it. From what I hear, though, the entire series is going to be set on the Barge of the Dead.
Right. Oh, well, I hope so.
So there you go.
One of the most encouraging quotes I read from him was he was talking about his love of Deep Space Nine. And he said, there were lots of new and innovative things going on during Deep Space Nine, and that's why it was my favorite of the new series. It was much more character-based.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been going through Voyager, as I think I've said many times on the podcast, and I have found it very frustrating how much of it is plot-based.
Well, that's why I like Barge of the Dead, though, because that was very much a B'Elanna-centric episode. She actually had a personality in that episode. She had her own desires, you know, like she had motivation and dealing with her mother.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting. Like, did you just not dig the kind of the Klingon cultural stuff?
Is not that really, no. I responded more to the Raven, which is has right? Seven of Nine, you know, kind of discovering her backstory. Again, very character-based.
Yeah.
But a lot of Voyager is not like that. It's based around a gimmick or, a, you know, a sci-fi concept or just like a plot mechanic.
Yes.
And to me, that gets really old. Whereas, like, I'm really excited to see him do, like, a 60s sort of, you know, optimistic type show with Deep Space Nine character development.
Mm-hmm. I would, yeah, and that's why it fills me with a lot of confidence that, A, he's going for the optimistic factor of Star Trek. B, he's going for the character-heavy aspect of Star Trek. And C, this guy's going to bring such a visually distinct style to this series. I think it's going to be really incredible. Whatever he does, it's not going to be forgotten about all that easily. Even if it's a total bomb and CBS All Access yanks it off the screens after that first season, it will be remembered.
Yeah, and I think one of the joys of the original series and Next Gen, and actually Deep Space Nine too, is that it's kind of a hangout show. You get to hang out with these characters and kind of just watch them grow over the series. And TNG faltered, I think, a little bit when more sort of driven by its, you know, episode concepts or whatever. But I think Star Trek is best when you know, go back to the original series or Deep Space Nine, where it is just like hanging out with the characters. And I hope this new show really kind of goes back to that concept.
It's always fun doing research for the podcast because I'll go back and watch old episodes of Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, as opposed to new episodes. all the scenes that take place in like Quark's Bar or 10 Forward where they're just sitting there talking to each other.
Yeah.
Like, I know, like, nowadays television's like, no, they have to be doing something at all times. I don't know. To me, like, it was a lot of my favorite moments just came from that. And just think about Quark and Garak discussing how the Federation's like root beer.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that to me is great. And I hope he really, well, I'm confident he'll really bring a lot of that towards the series. Because I don't think we need a super heavy action-based Star Trek generic sci-fi action show.
No, we definitely don't. I think a lot of where Star Trek fails as a movie is that a lot of the Star Trek movies are very action, or especially the later ones, especially TNG and the J.J. Abrams remake have a lot of action and explosions, and Star Trek's just not, that's not its forte.
Although I think the one that found a great balance in TOS, I mean, I know Wrath of Khan's an easy one to go to, but I really think that one of the best balances struck was in The Undiscovered Country.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's so much great character stuff going on with some really cool sequences. It was kind of a bit of a political thriller mixed in. Yeah. That's why I really want Star Trek to jump from tone to tone.
And genre.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. The one thing that does kind of worry me just about modern television is, like I said before, this serialized format where just kind of, if you're telling one contiguous story week to week, then there's not that much space for genre hopping. And I think that, hey, if Brian Fuller can balance that episodic storytelling with character-based ongoing kind of conflict and development,
like Deep Space Nine did.
Yeah, yeah. I think that'd be perfect.
Here's what strikes me, actually, now that I think about it. Because it's going on a streaming site, do you think they will do more of a less of an episodic thing and more of a sort of blend together? Because that's one of the strengths, or if you can think of it that way, of a bit like a streaming service where people are binge watching shows, is that it's easy to go from episode to episode and treat it as one longer episode.
Kim, I'll say this, like, I knew you were a bigger fan of the Zindi arc, season 3 of Enterprise than I was. I think that's Enterprise's second best season after season 4. But I do think that they actually did find, like, the right balance between, like, kind of having, like, different, like, distinct episodes.
I agree.
And having, like, this ongoing arc.
Yeah.
So I think there's, I think you bring up a very good point about binge watching and how it's really changed how a lot of people just view TV series. I just finished Jessica Jones a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I really think that suffered from the serialized television format, where to me I just looked at it and it seemed like 10 episodes of story stretched across 13 episodes of TV. I like Jessica Jones, but it, to me, like all the stories really just kind of mashed together. So I was just kind of, I don't want Star Trek to be like that. I'm not a fan of binge watching myself. Mm-hmm. I prefer watching shows week to week. It gives me a lot more time to let me think about the series, let it sink in. I remember the series much more distinctly when I'm watching it week to week than when I'm binge watching something. What are your guys' habits when it comes to television?
Well, because my television now is pretty much streaming. I just finished watching Mad Men, and now that you mentioned, I did go through, like, I would sit down and watch probably four or more episodes of Mad Men at, like, my height, because I was just addicted to that show.
I don't blame you. That's probably my number one or number two favorite shows of all time.
Oh, yeah, same. And, yeah, there's, now that I think about it, there are some episodes that kind of blend together.
I think, yeah. Well, you know, you bring that up. I'll say this. Like, I think Mad Men actually found a really good balance mm-hmm. between episodic and serialized television. You can be like, oh, that's the one where Don makes Peggy stay all night working in the office.
Yeah.
Or that's the one where the Brits come into the office to take everything over and someone gets their an injury to his foot.
Yes, right, know? As he got it in the door.
I think Breaking Bad did a great job at it, too.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, there's the one where, like, Jesse and Walt are stuck inside the facility trying to catch a bug.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? That sort of stuff, you know. But I think Mad Men's balance was right on. And Mad Men also hopped genres a lot. Like, you can go from, like, this wild and crazy episode where they're competing against another firm for, like, the Toyota Motors accounts. And, you know, like, that's, like, a fun kind of a bit of a caper. And the next episode, it's go to some very dark places. And I think Brian Fuller, I know he's talking about all this optimism stuff. I think he's going to be willing to go to some dark places in this new Star Trek series.
Well, I mean, if not, how are we going to get our episode like Cat's Paw?
Yeah.
Which I can see happening. Given his sort of gothic sensibilities,
yeah.
I could see there being an episode like Cat's Paw. Hopefully a good one, though.
Yeah,
well, if it means a good one. More episodes like Sub Rosa, where we can return to that Scottish planet and Crusher's grandmother has been imbued with superpowers that allow her to shoot electricity out of her hands as a zombie, then I'm all for it.
Here's a question. Would you like to see any nods to older Star Trek? I guess this might assume that it's going to take place in the future?
Yeah,
or
I think that's a good question. Like, well, here's the thing. Maybe I know a lot of fans want to see it in the 24th century because they're like, oh, well, we want to see cameos from all the actors from series that we like.
No.
I agree. I'm kind of like, no, I don't mind, like, a nod, you know, if they mention, like, a planet, you know, that we're familiar with, or if they, I don't know, if one crew member needs a positronic brain transplant or something.
Like, a Braille reference?
Yes.
you know, I think maybe, like, it's season 4 of Enterprise is a not bad, maybe that's a little too fan fiction.
I don't know. I actually dig the way that Manny Coto handled season 4. And he did interviews saying that he really wanted to tell the stories that fans wanted to see. And I'm not a big fan of fan service. You know, to me, I just kind of roll my eyes. But I do like him exploring the I really am trying to get rid of all of our remaining listeners, aren't I, Cam? No, but, you know, I do like the way that he was going to tackle, say, the augments and
that's
how that
one of my favorites,
ties into Khan. Or I know you're not a fan of Vulcan politics, but I love the Vulcan politics arc, you know, dealing with kind of the history of how these Vulcans that we are introduced to on Enterprise really don't seem like the same kinds of Vulcans that we see in the 24th century and how, you know, Archer helped them kind of change or find the ways of their past, which I think is interesting.
And lest we forget Bound.
Oh, dear. You will never forget that one.
No, I won't.
So I'm here to look at In a Mirror Darkly, like all the throwbacks. You have Tholians. You've got honestly, it could have been so bad fan service just having an entire episode take place on a Constitution class starship, you know, and they're even dressing in TOS uniforms.
Yeah,
that works for me, you know. Like, so I'm all for the nods to, like, you know, series of the past, as long as it doesn't get to be too much. Because here's the thing, I don't think they want to alienate new viewers, you know?
I just don't want to see an episode like Naked Now, you know, where it's kind of a revisit, where it's just like kind of ripping off a classic episode.
Yeah.
That's the sort of stuff I want them to stay away from.
Here's an episode that I know you like From Enterprise, and one that I was not a fan of at all, but like the Enterprise Borg episode, where
yeah, it was all right.
I just walked away from that one. I was like, what was the entire point of that one? There was zero point to that. It's just them chasing
the Borg get ratings. That's what the point.
Well, exactly. But it's just like they chase after this unknown ship. It gets away, or they destroy it, and that's that. And it's just kind of like, okay, well, yeah, like you said, the Borg get ratings.
Okay, well, why don't we just kind of wrap it up? Let's go down sort of the row here and just say, you know, what you maybe like the one thing that matters to you the most about what Brian Fuller brings to this new series. Carmen, why don't you start?
I'm going to go back to what I said earlier. I think his just his love of the series and his, I guess I mentioned before, he and I, well, at least it seems him, I've never met him, I both really respect kind of the spirit of Star Trek. And for that, and for me, that comes across mostly in kind of the Federation. And so I hope that he kind of just brings sort of the spirit of the Federation through in the new Star Trek.
Mm-hmm. I think spirit of Star Trek is key. That was one of my biggest concerns when we heard that Alex Kurtzman was going to be launching a new series. Obviously, he would have been in charge of hiring like the co-creator, showrunner. The fact that he's hiring Brian Fuller and this guy seems to get Star Trek and the importance of that, that makes me just ever so delighted. The other thing that I'll mention though is just the visual look of Star Trek has gotten so stale over, you know, the 80s, 90s, and aughts that I have complete confidence Brian Fuller is going to do something just that'll blow our minds, mm-hmm. essentially. Like nothing we've seen before. Even just production design, I mentioned it earlier, I can't wait to see what the 25th or 26th century looks like. And hey, if it's set on board the Reliant in the 23rd century, I still think it's going to look cool. Like, or there's going to be something more cinematic of it, because Star Trek doesn't have a long history of looking particularly cinematic. You've got the Abrams movies, you've got the motion picture. Beyond that, maybe Wrath of Khan to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know. Mm-hmm. So, Cam, what's most important to you about
Brian Fuller? I want it to be fun. I think that's something that Star Trek kind of lost when we get into the later series. I think Star Trek is best when it's really fun. Like, Star Trek isn't, you know, didn't become popular because it only appealed to older sci-fi fans. It was because everyone could get swept up in the adventure of it and maybe, you know, get some fascinating insight into a, you know, political angle or a social commentary or something. But ultimately, it was fun. And I think the original series exemplified that the best. I think the J.J. Abrams movies had the fun part with maybe not the smarts part. Mm-hmm. I would like to see this show kind of unite the two again like the original series did and the best hours of TNG or DS9 did and see that going forward.
I just think there's so much potential for this to go right. Fans seem to be on board, which I think is such a rare thing to witness in the Star Trek community.
Yeah.
Hey, he's got a lot of pressure on him right now, but I think he can live up to this. And the fact that he's had an idea kicking around in his head for a while, mm-hmm. he's got to be excited to take on this challenge.
Cut to 2018 where we're doing our death knell for the new Star Trek series. The What Went Wrong episode.
It's going to be nothing but like Price is Right fail horns.
So I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Let us know what you think of the Brian Fuller being signed on to do Star Trek 2017. Are you excited? Are you filled with trepidation? Let us know. Also, leave a review for us on our iTunes page. If you do, we'll read it out loud.
Even the hate mail, and we get a lot of that.
Thanks, wax on my face. Remember that guy?
What a jerk.
You can also reach us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in Voyager 2, not so much, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in Nor, comma, MPOC.
And Carmen.
You can find me at Carmen Live, that's Carmen with an I as in I hope this new series does well.
Fingers crossed. So until next time, the arena is closed.
transfer complete.